So here's the whole layout. Looking at statistical conclusions and statistical decisions at the same time. Now, the research hypothesis is either positive, zero, or negative. The statistical decision is either positive, zero, or negative. If we want a positive and we get a positive, we get a smiley face. We got what we wanted. But you got to remember that anytime you reject the no, that might be a correct rejection, a type 1 error, or a type 3 error. Getting what you want doesn't mean you got what you should have. And we have the same thing down here. You wanted negative, you got negative, you might be right, false alarming, or you got the world backwards. Here's another smiley face, but this is a smiley face because you expected a null and found a null. Still a smiley face, but now statistically this could be a correct retention or a type 2 error. Notice, smiley faces don't all have the same possible statistical problems. A smiley face about an effect might be correct type 1 or type 3. A smiley face about getting the null you hoped for might be correct or might be a type 2. So there's three layers going on here. I got things where I didn't expect them. And I might be right. Or the hypothesis might be right, but the data are wrong because this is a type 1 error. We shouldn't have found anything, but we did. Shit happens. Sampling variability, bad measures, bad design, bad sampling, who knows? Down here, same thing. We expected nothing, we got a negative, we might be right, it might be a type 1 or a type 3. The blue frowny face. We didn't find anything. We're sad. Hope for something, didn't find it. Statistically speaking, we might be right. It could be the hypothesis is wrong, those variables aren't related, and what we found was an oops. Or it could be an even bigger oops. The nasty blue ones. The oh my God face. What we found is backwards from what we hoped for. But keep in mind that the data might be right and the hypothesis might be wrong. Anytime you reject the null, it might be a correct rejection. This is why convergence and replication and theory need to agree. Again, you might have found something when there's nothing to find, or you might have found the opposite. So the world is a 3 by 3 by 3. Okay? Now, if I can get the world down to 27 cells, I'm doing okay. Okay? It's still a lot of them. The research hypothesis is positive, negative, or zero. The statistical decision is positive, negative, or zero. And we have to worry about what's really true in the population, positive, negative, or zero. Notice that we've got this whole big layout, and you've got to worry about two kinds of oops. Whether or not you found what you were hoping for, and whether or not you found what you should have found because it's true. Got to worry about both. Got to worry about both. Now, some of these combinations make more or less sense than others. Our research hypothesis was that there will be a negative correlation between performance in the GRE and cumulative GPA. We found a correlation of a positive 0.47, the statistically significant. We did not find what we hoped for. These results are contrary to our research hypothesis, a significant relation in the opposite direction from the research hypothesis. A literature review revealed 105 other studies involving these two variables, each of which found a correlation between positive 0.43 and positive 0.61, all of which were statistically significant. The consistent result of these other studies suggests that our study was a correct rejection. what we found does describe the relationship between these variables in the population. We got it right. We didn't get what we wanted, but we got it right. And this is also a horribly embarrassing set of findings. First of all, what are you smoking that you think that the two standard measures of performance are going to be substantially negatively correlated? Each of these things is sort of built to mimic the other. Okay? That's one sort of what the hell were you thinking? The other question is, why didn't you notice that there were 105 previous studies that all found the same result? Okay? And this is a watchword to all you young researchers out there. We tend to get enamored with our research hypotheses and to develop them and interleave them and pay careful attention to them. Make sure that you embed those hypotheses, or said differently, make sure that you can embed those hypotheses back into the research literature and they make sense. Don't be making shit up. All right. Our research hypothesis was a positive correlation between the severity of depression at the beginning of therapy and the amount of improvement a patient shows during the first 6 weeks. We found a null. Not a trivial correlation, in fact, almost a medium-sized effect. This is likely to be a power problem. But these are our results. We must go forward. So we did not find what we were hoping for. These results are contrary to our research hypothesis. 14 studies all found a significant negative correlation. Now, there's two ways you can think about this. We did commit a type 2 error. We didn't find something that we should have found because it's there. Had we run a larger sample, we might have committed a type 3 error, finding a positive correlation when everybody else finds a negative correlation. In that sense, if you're going to build a hierarchy of screw-ups, our small sample size saved us from making an even stupider mistake. Does that make sense? But don't use that as a reason to run small studies. That way the worst I can get is a null. I probably can't get it backwards. Not good strategy.
Cal, how could you publish something like that? Because it seems like it doesn't really contribute to the research to see that there was no relationship, because we really don't know.
You got three possibilities. One is, if you can identify why this happened because it's a population, a subpopulation for which this result is true contrary to what's normally true in the population. Or you might be able to get a methodological paper out of it about how this measure doesn't work on this subpopulation. Or you may discover something about sampling procedures that produce the screw-up and you can warn other people in a short methodological article. Okay? And those are really your three choices. When you find something that's just bass-ackwards, is it really the same population? Is it really the same measure? And when you put those two together, do you get what you're supposed to? Okay? There's a lot of really good stories told at conferences, usually around alcohol, usually an admission of one type or another, that saves everyone else who's listening to that conversation. That stuff doesn't tend to get into print. It's a shame. Because two or three smart people screwing up and figuring out why could save dozens of others. But publishing that stuff doesn't make us look good. A careful litany of how we have screwed up and how to avoid it is not seen as advancing the research objective. We expected a positive correlation. We found a positive correlation. What else could you want? You could want it to be right. Everybody else found a non-significant negative correlation. Again, first question, what are you doing hypothesizing a positive correlation when everyone else finds a small correlation? Second question, if we keep finding this, why do the rest of these people keep running underpowered studies? This is not tiny. It's small. In most research areas, consistently finding a correlation of 0.12, 0.13, consistently would change theory or practice in that area. Because it ain't none. And after the first, at least four or five keep getting the same number, but it's non-significant. At some point, somebody should run a damn power analysis and figure out a way to get enough data to show that while the estimate is right, we ought to treat it as non-zero. The other alternative, of course, is to take those 22 studies, if they really are comparable, and run a meta-analysis. Another way, a more post hoc way, around the sample size problem. But still, there's a lot wrong here. You shouldn't be looking at this and anticipating a positive correlation. Okay, again, message to young scientists. Know the research literature that other people are going to look at to combine your findings with. Yeah?
If they range from negative to positive, why couldn't you think it would be a positive?
Well, you got to give me some reason that you think this is on the positive end. So if you can say, you know, these 22 studies, this isn't just random variation. That some of these studies are a population that has a weak negative relationship. The other taken from a population that has a weak positive relationship. My study's being run in that population. If you told that whole story, you'd be fine. But to look at a range of positive to negative and pick one side and say, no, really, that's it. A little too arbitrary. And this, by the way, is what meta-analysis is for. When you run this meta-analysis, if you combine all of them, you're going to get a zero. But the other part of meta-analysis is comparing studies. Combining and comparing. And if you look carefully at the studies that gave that range, you may well come up with a story about when you get a negative and when you get a positive. And if you're smart enough to do that, you should try to get both findings in your study, not just one end. One of the best ways to get positive attention as a young researcher is to solve an argument. And almost all arguments are either they're not sampling the same, they're not controlling the same, or they're not measuring the same. Why did this whole group get one set of results and this whole group get the other set of results? And these guys always find a positive correlation. These always find no relationship at all. They either disagree on measurement, who they're sampling, or how they're running their study. One of the classic things to look for, particularly in experimental research, is whether they're running that study between or within. Because between is cleaner. You don't have to worry about counterbalancing because everybody's only doing one thing. The result of counterbalancing can be null production. Whichever one you do second, you do better. If we counterbalance that out, it goes away. If the people who agree with this result are all using the same measure, the people who agree with this result are all using the same measure, make sure they're the same measures. There was an argument about the use of the 16PF as a hiring agent. And I kid you not, this is a true story. Person published a meta-analysis of about 70 or 80 studies, used R-square instead of R, didn't notice they were combining positive and negative correlations. Oops. Okay. Next layer of oops. When you look, the studies that found positive correlations tended to be looking at job performance. The people who found negative correlations tended to be looking at job problems. All by itself, that accounts for the direction difference between the two sets of findings. Missed that too in the meta-analysis. Okay? Looking for and identifying inconsistencies in the literature and then solving it is a great dissertation. You're smart enough to have caught it. You've read enough of the literature to notice there's a problem. You're smart enough to caught it. You're super smart enough to have figured out how it happened, and then you were able to run a good enough study to demonstrate that you can get everybody else's results all at once. Hugely powerful sort of dissertation. For those of you who are planning a dissertation, I'm tired of doing these. You can read the rest. All right, here's a quick example of how all this works in SPSS.